So when you came into this show, maybe I'm going to go a little bit through all the pieces and the way I thought about the show in general. I'm mainly working now on stream of stories, which is a work in progress, I would say, which is where you can see different pieces connected to this project here. But I wanted to introduce the viewers, with another piece that I did earlier, which is called The Storyteller, and which is an important piece for me. So when you come in, you come with the storyteller, which is, his name is Azalia, and it's a piece I did for the Marrakech Biennale in 2012. Going around Marrakech, I don't know if some of you have been there earlier, but there is like this square which is called the Djamafna Square, and this is, I would say, quite a touristic place now, but somehow it's also like the core of the city. And observing this place, I was interested by people going from one circle to another circle. They're sort of like some sort of drift is happening there, if you look at it from above. And so I started to make research about the storytellers, and which is in Arabic, it's called the Haqqa. And literally it means to make a circle around you. And so while doing research, I've been reading about a particular storyteller, and it was just like two lines in an article that was mentioning that one storyteller specialty was to storytell movies. So I was like, wow, this is for me. So I've got some friend in Marrakech and asked him and to make some research where to find this person. And so we got his number when I came to Marrakech, and there was few lines. I mean, like the my friend said, well, I have this teacher of cinema which is telling me that his specialty is to storytell, you call that, peplum movies. And I thought this was strange because I could not really figure out why peplum. But well, finally I met Azalia, and so I was like, so what kind of peplum are you storytelling? And I was like, no, I'm storytelling Bollywood movies. And this was making much more sense for me because in Algeria we had first on the national TV the Egyptian movie, and then we had the Bollywood movie. So yeah, it was kind of so this was making much more sense for me. So I asked him, like, yeah, what film do you like? And then I've been going through a lot of Bollywood movies, seen a lot of them, and finally found that film which is called Dosti, which is the classical in the Bollywood industry. And what I liked with this film from Saitam Bose is that this is the story, it's like 3 hours and a half of storytelling, of like dramas. But at a certain time, like those two characters that you see in the film, they goes around them, and so it was, in a way, it was, I was asking Azalia to talk about it and to storytell his own story. So, and all this is happening in a special place in Marrakech, which is really strange. It was supposed to be an opera house. It was Hassan II that wanted to have an opera house in Marrakech, and you really wonder to to whom it would be dedicated, to this opera house. And the architect made some sort of copy of Opéra Garnier in Paris, but the construction failed. So this is like a concrete shell which is unfinished. So outside it's looking like a cake, like a little bit pink and everything. And a big pastry, creamy pastry. And inside this is like this concrete round shell. So I ask Azalia to storytell the film in this circle. So yeah, it's another circle space. So somehow it was good for me to start with this piece because it's about interpretation already, the way you read things, because I mean the interesting thing with him is that, you know, he's putting his vernacular culture into the way he's like telling us this movie. And so it was a good pass to come to this piece. I mean, this research I started a few years ago, which is so Stream of Stories, and Stream of Stories is like a journey through the oriental origins of the fables of La Fontaine. For the ones that don't know, like La Fontaine fables are something that we all get to know and have to learn by heart in school in France. And if we're lucky enough, some teachers will tell us or mention that is that he got inspired by Aesop, so by the Greek. Okay, I'm going to go back to the storyteller. But I found out that, he's got also an Oriental influence without, but we never, we're not mentioned with this Oriental origin. So I thought it was kind of interesting at the time of how do you say that? Where you can see that the politics everywhere in Europe and are getting how can I say that? Like
closing up.
Yeah, are closing up. That you know, it was interesting research and project to reopen a little bit the discussion and to balance a little bit, you know, this hegemony which is going around. I started my research and found out this journey is taking us back to the 3rd century before Christ, and with animal fables which are coming from India in a text. I mean, at the beginning it's like oral fables, which is named the Pachatantra, and from actually those fables were made for prints. It's like one translation actually is the Mirror of a Prince. And they became, a first translation was made by Berzoy, which is a Persian doctor that took the text, translated to Persian as Kalile Wadimne, and finally in 750 Ibn Mukaffa was translating into Arabic as Kalila Wadimna, and this version was then translated in 57 languages and this is how it came to Europe as different version, a Latin version and a Spanish version. So behind me you have like a cartography which is not realized by me but by Thomas North, which is the first English translator of the fables. And the text in English is called The Moral Philosophy of Downey. And you can find a replica of the text over there. And actually, Thomas North was doing a lot of research also about the origins of all those fables and where they were coming from. So here in the space you have an Arabic version, a Persian version, the English version, and the final French version from La Fontaine. And I'm telling you a little bit what you can see around. Here you have two different pieces which are some mixed, because also all the iconographies that goes with all those versions and text and translations are really interesting. And here you have a mix of iconographies of the same fables. So here you have a mix of the turtle and two ducks, and here you have a sort of collage of the animal sick with the plague that you can find also on the wall at like some pages coming out of the books, and which are enlightened with some gold words which are a little bit some sort of intertext between all the versions, from the Indian version, the Arabic version, and the French version. So this is, and then if you go downstairs, you can see another film which is called The Algerian Novel. And this project is a bit different, but it's also related to history and stories, and also to the relation Algerian have to their history and to their image and their relation to images in general. So this is some sort of overall. Yes, like this? Okay. So do you want to...
It's ridiculous that she has two different book of works, but I think that it's only one. Because if you look at the three body of works, they're all linked to history and stories. The storyteller is telling us a story that is not his story, and making it into his story, because in the video you have some excerpts of the original Bollywood movie. So he's translating something, because this gentleman never been to India. He doesn't speak any Indian language. So he's turning something that was created there into something else in Morocco. What's interesting also about, and she called it a novel. A novel is supposed to be fiction. But then if you look at the fiction in the Algerian novel, the fiction is made out of postcards that were produced by non-Algerians in an Algiers that were built by non-Algerians. So you see people retelling or reclaiming a story out of a story that was theirs and trying to translate it into something that would be meaningful for them. And of course, in this room, we also deal with translation. And the main thing in the three body of works is orality, because the way the story is written or told in the Algerian novel is told by people who are commenting on on what they're seeing and trying to transform it into some kind of a contemporary story, trying to make it a story of their own. That's exactly the same work of translation that is doing the storyteller, and this is obviously a work of translation. Now, all that goes down to politics. It's obvious with the Algerian novel, but it's obvious with everything. How do we create an hegemony? How do we create history?
Yeah.
It was so interesting, September 11, when big thinkers, very intelligent people, were saying this is the end of history. We're entering another history. So the first question was, what is the history we're talking about? And of course, there's this tendency of saying, my history is the history, which is one of the little things Europeans tend to do. My history is the history. We retrieve it in those tales. Because what is a storytelling? And actually, we retrieve in those three pieces the way history was written. Of course, Benjamin told us that the story is written by a guy who won the war, whatever that war is. But then you see that even in those things, and I guess this is why a certain part of the world who is not interested in dominating anything, was never quoted. Because what is the principle of a storytelling? It's changing every day. It's all, if the storyteller is good, he's moving it, he's not interested in inscribing it. And then somebody comes, who's been reading Zoppi, who's been reading stuff, and he signed La Fontaine. Because of course those other people were not existing. Gutenberg made the European believe that history is only what is written, and what is told does not matter. The same with monuments. Yeah. Some people, very intelligent and bright people, would tell me, oh, I love to go to Africa, a beautiful landscape, but they don't have history. I ask him, what is history? You know, a castle, Buckingham Palace, right? This is history. So I think those three body of works are just questioning the notion of history and the notion of translation. And what is nice with translation is the distance it's creating with the so-called original and the translated. And in that case, the translated becomes an original too. Because if the translator is good, he betrays.
Yeah.
There's this example, since some of you may be Brits. If you're in England, you say drawing cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. If you're a good translator, you think you're a good translator because you know the meaning of the word. We translated in French into Il pleut des chats et des chiens, which means nothing in French. Which also means that any language, hence the idiomatic, is linked to the history. And you cannot properly translate, you cannot properly betray if you don't have the history you're dealing with. So, Katia, I have a question. Was I totally wrong in creating a relationship between
No, I think you're totally right, actually.
And are you trying to, not to rewrite, because that would mean that you're in a kind of battle and a war, but just to restitute or to you know, bring things that were there, what Baldwin would call the evidence of thing not seen. Are you working on showing us the evidence of thing not seen?
Exactly. Well, I mean, as an artist, I believe that, you know, I'm not a philosopher or thinker. I have to produce situations where people can project their own history too. And I always seen art like I compare it to literature all the time. It's you need to, when you're reading a book, I mean, you're not going to start to read the resume of the book. I mean, it would not make sense, but you need to start I mean, you're just reading the book and you're projecting into the characters, into the dramas and everything because of your own feelings and history. So I questioned myself to our relation to history really early because I'm French Algerian. I always felt actually I'm a little bit part of this complicated history, like I'm a product of it. And I was learning in France. I mean, I was going to doing my education in France, but going back to Algeria, like all the holidays. And of course, I arrived at the point where we did the Algerian War. And I mean, of course, my family was telling me some stories about it. When we arrived and in school, I was told another story and with facts and stuff. And I was like, wow, strange. It seems like this is not the same story. So really early, I had this notion that history is a fiction, and that, you know, this is interesting because in French we have only one word, it's called histoire, and histoire, and you have two, in English you have two words, you have story and history, but we have one word for, it would be like, in one word there is two territories already, and so it's kind of strange because it's like a back and forth between facts and storytelling or documenting, and so somehow I think the core of the work is really much onto that, like what is our relationship? How we do articulate ourselves? How do we position ourselves between all this and our own histories, our own fiction, our own projections, and the past? Also, I'm always I mean, it's always strange how we forget our history so well, so fast. This is, this faculty, this human faculty of forgetting the past so fast is like, for me, it's kind of strange. Like we don't know like where this kind of small discourse of some hegemonical culture, or I don't know what to say, like there will be like a strong culture and a low culture and
it's a high culture.
So the idea also with this project was like to go back to and the way and to show like how things are much more like fluid, and it was always like that. It was always porous, and so somehow I don't know if I answered your question now.
I'll help you further. No, yes, this notion of high culture and low culture. It's this notion of who is writing the history that becomes a reference. I was so overwhelmed when I discovered that this guy, I was told, discovered America. Mm-hmm. Stopped in the cabin thinking he was in India.
Yeah.
And they're still telling us that Christopher Columbus discovered America. So even this notion of discovery is quite an interesting one. But let's go back to you and to this notion of translation. My belief is that an artist is a translator.
Exactly.
An artist is somebody who is dealing with the in-between.
This is where you wanted to take me, because this is what I'm saying, actually.
There's this French psychologist, Henri Delacroix, who defined language as the tool that can transform a chaotic world of sensation into representation and forms. Which means basically that we all, supposedly, if we're not robots, we all share the chaotic world of sensation. It becomes language when we translate it. And when we translate it according to the tools that we have. So there's this one thing. The other thing is the in-between. I think that the site of translation is precisely the in-between. A good translator must be schizophrenic.
Yeah.
It must be in one language and the other one. And he has to create a third one. Good translation is not a replica of the first or the second, it's something else. That's probably why the best translators of poetry were poets themselves. They did not necessarily master the other language, at least they mastered the metaphor. So I think you're lucky because you're not Donald Duck, that's how I call Donald Trump. Or Marine Le Pen, or all those people who never heard of the in-between. So it's not only that you're an artist, but you write in the in-between that has shaped the contemporary France, Algeria and France. So you're forced to question when you're telling us that at school, they were telling you this, and you'll go home, see the grandparents, they would tell you that. So you're forced to be in that in between.
Exactly.
And then the schizophrenia is probably not to fight one part or the other, but to try to find out the third.
Exactly.
The third line or the third word to use. So do you see yourself as a forced translator? I mean, you choose to be an artist. Now, what came first? You choosing to be an artist, or you without knowing, but feeling that you were a translator, decided that the best tool to perform this translation was art?
Really early I had to, because also people were always asking me what is my position, if I'm French or if I'm Algerian. Actually, people still ask me this question all the time. And in my biography, I mentioned that I'm both, I have both passports, and I'm really happy that still for the moment I don't have to choose. I hope I won't have to. And for me, it's totally clear that I'm both, because I'm part of, you know, it's in my blood. Physically, actually, I'm not typed from one side on another side, and I kind of like that.
I thought you were Spanish.
Yeah, but people think I'm Italian, whatever. I mean, it's fine. Well, except like when I go to Central Africa, I feel like I'm a little bit strange.
You're not strange, you're white.
But I always liked that position, and I remember being in the. That's a little bit my personal story, but my mom will take me to the airport and my father will grab me at the other airport. And I love when I was a kid, like this moment, when I had like this little bag here with my ticket and my passport, and I was called UM. And
ugly monk. No, uncomely minor.
And for me, at that time, it was really like this time, and I love airports actually, and like those known places, I always love them. Because for me, like this in-between time was like, I was over the Mediterranean Sea, and I felt this is exactly my space, that I was feeling comfortable there. up the sea and in between the two countries. So I think I studied art, to come back to your question, when I was young, I wanted to be, still somehow it's still there, I wanted to be a reporter, a camera reporter. I wanted to go around the world and see what's going on and understand it by myself and try to show it to other people. And I didn't go to journalism, but I don't know, I've forgotten a bit like the circumstances that I've been to School of Art. For me, I was still questioning myself when I was in the School of Art, like what I'm doing here, why did I choose that? And actually, I felt that this education was, this context of education was the right place for me, because I could navigate between different things and different forms, and so I felt like, yeah, I liked it. And finally I started to work on identity. I think my first work were on the situation of women in the Arab world and things like that. And I felt like that it was so clear for me, if I compared myself to my friends that were in the art school, that it was, my role was to was there and was to tell about this in-betweenness and this space between things, and yes, to be a translator, because and actually it was quite kind of, I mean, now it got a little bit in the fashion or something like that, but at that time I did my graduate, my diploma, having a political work or trying to deal and to show, because some of my first films, like one film is called Bloody, A Possible Scenario, is like, I'm trying to understand what's going on in Algeria. And I was already like doing some works and filming there. Some of my teachers didn't like it at all, and thought, you know, an artist should not be too political. But so I finished. I got my diploma. I took 1 year. I exported myself to Austria, and which is a strange place, and somehow I needed also, if I think about it, like I needed to be also in the situation of my father, and to feel what it is to be outside of your territory.
To be, to use one of your words, to be a stranger.
Yeah, exactly. And then it became, and also this year in Austria was, yeah, without, I was not in school, it was like this year after, when you have to decide, I am going to go for it, or should I change my way and do something else? And it was quite a strong year, and I decided that, yeah, I have to be there. And I think I answered.
Yes, and I'm sure I might have agreed with this teacher of yours who said that art should not be political, because I think that art is political. So if it's obvious, maybe there's a problem. Has to be a bit more subtle. Art is political. All human beings, all statements are political. But then, I'm happy firstly that you did not become a journalist, because there's a problem. I'm sitting in some some awards things, and namely this Photo World Award. It's for photojournalists, and the discussions are always based on the truth. A photojournalist is supposed to report the truth.
Yeah.
And a photograph is not supposed to lie. It's supposed to be an archival material. And of course, we all know that a photographer is at Photoshop. He wants to say Katya's discussion was a success. He would put his camera in a certain place. He wanted to say it was a failure. He would put his camera in another place. And people had a feeling that it was empty or it was crowded. But it's the same camera and no process. There's a notion you were mentioning. I remember those two storytellers. One is telling his story and the other one started to tell the same story. And the guy said, no, this is not that. And the other one said, shut up, I'm the one telling the story now. So I think that this is what art is all about, contrary to journalism or history or quote-unquote sciences, where you're supposed to deliver something that is the truth.
First.
At least the artist can start by saying, this is fake. And maybe that's the only reason the only way to reach the truth.
But everything is truth also.
Absolutely, or everything is fake. So how do you deal with fiction, fakeness and truth?
Yes, for me, everything is a bit, the importance is not if it's true or if it's a fiction. The importance is the situation and it's your position. So I think most of my work is about that, like the way also, even if I just, in my photograph, this is about position. And you're right, when you're filming, and this is certainly, I like film also because this is an in-between medium, because it's a conversation between sound and images and movements and, whatever. But, and even in a fixed image, there is, like the way I'm taking the images, you never really know where you are. It's not talking about a location most of the time. Mm-hmm. But it's asking the viewer what could be the location. And as a viewer, you just like project your own location within an image or something like that. So what is the original? What is, I don't know.
Not the original. The original is what you're producing and signing.
Yeah.
That's what we say in the art business. The original is the original. I was asking about truth, fiction.
Truth and fiction.
Construction.
Well, I don't know. I think everything is a fiction for me.
But there's something you mentioned, and I would like you to elaborate a bit on that. Like, the way you're imposing, or the way an artist is imposing, or at least trying to impose, a point of view. What's interesting with the camera is that there is a point from which things are seen or described. So you were telling us about where you stand, but it was blurred for me. Do you know, or can you describe where you stand? Even if it would be a twilight zone, but...
In between.
How do you... Describe a bit that in between.
This in between, like... how is it the in between? I like the in between... It's hard to describe the in between, because the in between is like...
Blur.
Sorry, the in between is... is an open space. So, for me, the in-between is like, if I have an image of it, it's like this, there is this line in between, And my position is like to jump over the line all the time. And how I can describe it, maybe I like the sea. This is because, yeah, I mean, this is some sort of line, but it's with movements. It's not like it's always in movement. So yeah, maybe the in between is just can be the desert or can be the sea.
The desert being a sand sea.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or a salted sea. I don't know, the in-between is like where we're all both. We're all in-between.
But then, while you're negotiating your in-between, when we look at the work that we described when we started, I have the feeling that the artist who's producing those works went on a mission. I see something there, not unwriting history or polluting history by stories, changing perspective, proposing something else. What is your mission? Because contrary to your first work that were overly political, I find those three body of works here much more political and much more to the point, contrary to when you were saying, women, da-da-da-da-da-da, where precisely they're all located in a very clear in-between. But at the same time, the intention everywhere is kind of clear for those who have ears or eyes. And of course, and there's a different layers of reading. Nobody can read it in a certain point of view and perspective. But I see a mission there, maybe I'm totally wrong. Did you wake up one morning and you received that call and there was this tape in this phone booth? And somebody told you, your mission, Mrs. Phelps, is? So is it a mission impossible? Is it a real mission? Or do you feel that there's nothing else you could do to deconstruct all those quote-unquote evidences?
Yes, it's a little bit a mission. I mean, taking the path of art is a mission, because it's not an easy journey. Sometimes I find it really difficult, so sometimes I really wonder why I've been there, but yet it's a little bit a mission, because I think we need to deconstruct, to reconstruct, and it's like those Lego games, like, you know, you're constructing something, and then you deconstruct the thing, and you start to reconstruct something else. So yeah, it's like. For me, art is about that. It's like renewing itself all the time, and that's the role of the artist, as the role of the translator, to jump from a story to another story, and to recall that you have always to take some
distance.
Some distance to things, to understand them better. And so yeah. And in my work, I think this is something which is really important for me. I'm trying not to be didactic. I don't know if people, sometimes people are asking me like, what is your point? Like,
as your message.
What is the message? The message, I think, is, you know, there is one book which is really important, that was really important for me. It's like the Les Mille Plateaux, the Thousand Plateaus from Deleuze, because, I mean, I like this book because you can read it in, you can jump to a chapter to another chapter, you can read it in different ways. And also I really like one cake which is called millefeuille. Because you can eat that cake in very different ways. So I think my mission maybe is to point out the fact that things are not stuck, things are moving, and we have to make them move, and we have to take position into life or something like that.
So before we start the conversation with the audience, I have one last question. Somebody wrote or said somewhere that a work of art changes according to the person who's looking at it.
Yes.
Because the viewer is also another interpret. Now, we are in a country that thinks it is unique. They have a queen, they have a great historical past, and they're Brexiters even.
Yeah.
Do you have a consciousness of the audience when you're displaying things? It's clear that if we look at those different works, if you would show, as you did, the storyteller in Marrakesh, the Algerian novel in Algiers, etc., etc. So, did you have in mind that you were doing your show in London, and how did it change the way you're putting it there, knowing that people might get lost in translation? So how did you accommodate, if ever, you did or you tried?
I got this proposal for this place, which I really like. And when I saw this room, I like it because, it's like this Victorian house, high ceiling. Already this space is part of history. And so I wanted to have a really museal way to install stream of stories. And so I asked for this green, that to have this green on the wall, which you can, this green is also the color of the
En français?
Ouais. Un tableau pour
A board.
Like a board.
Like in a school.
Yeah, like in school.
It's usually black. It may be green.
No, it's green.
I mean, when I was a kid, it was black.
I got a
black
green one.
Are you younger than me? It became fancier after that.
But somehow this color I mean, like for me, like this green was also like the green of libraries, and it was also some British green, so yeah, I wanted to, and somehow I wanted to have all those research and works and text and images circulating in this, yeah, museum, because museums are, it's not book of histories, but this is, you know, it's like monuments of histories. So this is how I thought, this was what I thought about this space. And the Algerian novel I did, yeah? So this is...
And what about the way it is played?
The way, actually this is the first time that you have like this little bench in the space for the storyteller. And because I wanted you to be in the same situation or in a situation that was a little bit theatrical, you know, and I wanted to have the storyteller like in a size of a human size, like it would be, like you would be in this opera strange place in Marrakesh.
Funky opera.
And I wanted you to start with this past, because already he's taking us from Jannah Athna Square to India in different in a strange accent, and yeah, to bring you here, and then to go back downstairs with the Algerian novel, which is another history, and the film is more like a document or something like that. So it's shown also, and I wanted to have like those fixed image related to the kiosk in Alger. I like that you can circulate in the space, and you still have the sound of the fixed image. Sort of postcards that I did, you know, some framed image that I took myself, and that you can circulate between the moving images and the fixed image. Did I?
Last question: why Fanon is so present in this Algerian novel?
Why is
Fanon?
Well, because Fanon, I mean, Fanon came to Alger, and Fanon is like.
A myth
in Algeria, and you can also find in this. In this kiosk. I mean, this kiosk for me is a little bit the Algerian Abi Warburg, like because this Farouk, the owner of the kiosk, is coming every morning and he's installing. You know, he's picking up all his archive, his personal. The archive is collection, and he's setting up every day a new installation. So he's like he's a translator, actually.
Yes. He's a curator.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking also sometimes when I'm I always think a lot when I'm discussing. So I'm really happy to have this conversation with Simon because he's so clever. He's a good reader, and. So, yeah, Farouk is also like this translator is like setting up the Algerian history every morning, and there is in the film you have an historian speaking, you have different people that are really connected to different levels. In Algeria, and you have also the student of history, So yeah, I mean, the idea was to have like
multi-layered,
yeah, point of view and multi-layered positions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is where you're asking if they
have questions.
Is this our girlfriend that is going, that is being tortured?
Sorry, my husband's with her now.
He's torturing her.
Yeah.
Shall we maybe take three questions and then you answer them?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not exactly a question, but I think that the Indic thing, there is no property. And what you show here and what you say before means that the history, personal history and the history and the stories don't belong to Roman National, as we say in French. So there is not, you know, in Kalina Wadina, for example, it's not from a place or in another place, you know. And for example, the storyteller, the story doesn't belong to someone, because everyone, you know, and you could do something with. And it's the same, you know, the dancers. And in this video, you show the postcards, but on the other side of the street, you know. And I think that the street is a way to show how we deal. We always deal with borders, capital, that's capital, borders, the capital, you know, and everything like this, and the national way of thinking, especially between France and Algeria. Mm-hmm.
And
so there was a point, there was a question.
Have you got any questions?
Hi. Do you want microphone?
Do you see us?
Yes.
I thought you were blind or something.
I don't I have a question to both Katia and Simon, because I think it's an interesting turn to what we could call in between. I think what is interesting with artists is their awareness of the environment in which they live, because sometimes they're like sponge. They absorb emotions, and their ability to absorb a maximum makes, in my opinion, the difference between the higher and the lowest. But also, Simon has used that concept of translating. Yes, there's that ability to translate from the invisible to the mundane world. But at the same time, they use a language which sometimes, if you're not initiated to that visual narrative, it is difficult to have a certain opinion. But at the same time, good artists always need around them, I don't like that word critic, but art historian. And Simon, based on his experience also, who sometimes can put word as a poet, what is the ability you have to read what certain artists have that they cannot put into word, that normal people cannot do, and also that ability of translating to normal people, but also the choice of language. How can you make it accessible to, let's say, the non-initiated, to those who just tap onto that word? And Simon, ask you a question, let's say when you have you are addressing to an audience in the West or back in Algeria. Is there anything unconscious in terms of how you're making the change? And now you being a translator, actually I have a question to both you and Simon, is are you aware of, it's not a power, but maybe a privileged position whereby the way you decide to translate the colors that you're using, affect maybe the non-initiate in a certain way that they might misconstrue or go to a completely wrong. But are you aware of that power, and how do you keep also a certain level of integrity? Because ultimately it's down to keeping a level of integrity, and that's the question I have to go for you, because I think it is important next to the artist to have someone who understands the poetic essence of that art and to make it available.
I shall answer first and briefly, and then let the artist elaborate more. I'm a normal guy, and you're talking like normal people in a very strange way, as if there were special people and normal people. I'm a normal guy, so I deal with normal issues. I know that back to the days when I was driving a car, that the guy who was running the garage was a special guy. I don't know how he was translating my engine, but I know that the bill was always strange. And what he was explaining it to me, it was even worse than Hegel or whatever. I think that guy was special. But I don't think, there's somebody who said once, nothing that is human is stranger to me. So this notion of normality is something that I find a bit personally strange, because again, I'm a simple guy. Normal.
And concerning my position, if I'm when I'm doing a work and don't address myself to a part of the world, I'm not addressing myself to only to the Algerians or to the French or to because I have like this, but I'm conscious that people are not going to read it in the same way. But I'm not thinking like actually the film Downstairs, the Algerian novel. It was shown first in an exhibition which is called Made in Algeria. So a lot, even if for the moment the film didn't go there, a lot of Algerians saw it. And it was in Marseille, which is like
a second.
Almost Alger. And it was questioning, I had like some different feedbacks, but some people, because there is many layers of history of relations that people can have with Algeria. So some people were maybe, because at a certain time, this young student from history is talking about the Archi. Archi maybe doesn't mean anything for you, but it's like, in the Algerian language means like, a traitor,
a collaborator.
The question was like, do I translate this or not? I chose to translate it because this is the word. But for some people, because there is a lot of French descendant of Colomb in Marseille too. So the museum was a bit scared that it could be a little bit not well
perceived,
but that's not me, that I did not introduce this word in the language. It's an existing word, so this is, I'm not, I think I'm always trying to make it readable for everyone, without having any kind of art historical background, art history education or whatsoever. So that's also a position that I take, that my work is easy to go in, I think.
I would even add that since I'm a normal person, a work of art would require a special effort, a speciality for me to get into it. It's probably a work of art I would not spend more than 1 second in front of. I mean, when I was a kid, I had this beautiful experience. I saw the Seven Samurais. Mm. It was all in Japanese. It's Japanese people doing strange things, talking strange language, having strange habits. And I enjoyed it. Mm. I'm not sure I got all the lines, but I'm sure I got the thing. I think to help you out in your future life, I think that there's always a part of mystery in any art production. I think that is always a part of unknown, even for the person who produced it. And you will see, Katya can tell it, you put something there, and this normal guy that we all are would kind of say, oh, there's this thing, and the artist said, oh, thank you, didn't see it, I was there. So things are there to be taken. And the more they need this academic translation, the more they're suspicious to me.
Yeah. But it's not about academic, it's not that dichotomy between normal and not. What I'm saying is this is to appreciate whatever is there. Obviously, based on your background, there are certain things that you naturally were introduced to, and other things you were not. But there are different goals sometimes you have if someone breaks down to you and says, oh, there's this thing, and that's help. And obviously, yes, as you said, sometimes even the artist we discover is heard when, let's say, someone from the audience says, oh, there's this dimension. And often artists or writers will say, yes, once that piece is done, I'm like you, I rediscover, and thank you. You have mentioned that point, but it's not so much about normality versus the sometimes.
You're the one who came up with normal people who would not understand.
Maybe it was possible. I used the wrong word. What I wanted to say is possibly, and I don't like to use that word, is possibly maybe the initial or those who are used to, those who have been exposed longer to, let's say, being, you know, confronted artists. And understand maybe better
I won't mention any name, but I know a couple of people who've been exposed for like the past 30 years to art. And I would have asked them a question. I think that they were maybe overexposed and something was burning their brain. So exposure is not enough.
But that's why I ask you the question also, that obviously you have those who were exposed who can help facilitate others to understand better, because they have also those gifts. But that's why I ask the question also of how to keep, let's say, that level of quality in a way of how you dissimulate the knowledge, how you help people to understand better, let's say, what, to speak, let's say, from African art, like plenty of, you still have people, including African, who don't get it. But you have those who understand the code and help to say, listen, I'm not saying the truth, but
I don't know what it's all about. We're talking about African art? I don't know. But if we talk about integrity, whatever it is, I think that this is just a human thing where we do things and we try to do them the best way possible. Mm-hmm. Try not to lie. Then after that we might become famous artists or starving artists, etc., etc. I think that the bottom line is just to make your translation in the most honest manner. Not to translate another to please that one, not to translate another for a subsidy to increase your things. Just, like Baldwin said, just to put that thing on the blank page and then happens what may. But there's no other way. And that's, again, to some normal people. That's, again, why I'm going back to whatever people are doing in their lives. It's always the same thing. You can be a decent banker, more difficult because you're dealing with money, but you can be a decent banker or a corrupted one. You can be a decent artist or a fake one. You can be a decent doctor or not. It depends on
your position.
How you engage. Why are you doing what you're doing? That's the very thing. And I used to tell to young artists, if you took that journey to become famous and to be in opening and have champagne, etc., forget about it. You do it because you feel like doing it, and you're lucky or you're not, or you reach an audience and that. And there was a tendency in our very technocratic world where kids thought that everything could be taught. They thought that, I attended an art school, I graduated from an art school, I'm an artist. You know, all these kind of things. Unfortunately, art is just that space where you can have all the PhDs you want. It won't mean that you're a good artist or not. Contrary to a medic, I'd rather have a medic who's a PhD, MD, to take care of my lungs. But art is, precisely, this is what was said. Art is this in-between place where there's no claims. It's free,
yeah.
And it's really dumb. Dumb being this kind of church in German. So it's this space that is not claimed by anyone. It's a space of exchange. It's a place where it's like these open markets where people come and put their things there. They discuss with other people. There's no flag. It's just this open space where things can happen or not.
I think we've got time for one more question, but I also have a very short question.
Yeah.
I wondered, so from what I understand, the way I understand the exhibition, but also from what you were sort of talking about, I understood this to be challenging and sort of undoing a lot of the kinds of ideas, European ideas around authenticity of objects and texts, and what we conceive of as derivative and what we see as authentic. And how often what we see as derivative is actually intertangled with authentic or not. I mean, there's no such thing as authentic, right? But like entangled in other derivative objects. And so I wondered, what do you see as a sequel, a sort of natural, logical sequel to this particular exhibition, visually, if there is any such thing as a sequel?
What do you mean by a sequel?
A follow-up, like a continuation.
A continuity, an awesome.
Like, well, where do you see yourself
a sequel?
So what? How I feel about what's going to come after?
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I feel like I don't know. I want to go on with this project. I want to make a film, actually. So. What you see here is like some work in progress, and it's going to develop in different situations. Like the next situation with this project is going to be, it's going to be shown in Glasgow at CCA, and so yeah, I'm going to go on and to rethink, and there normally. Then it's going to start to be activated and performed. And also, I'm doing a workshop with some students, and they also are going to activate all these documents I'm combining.
Yeah, and talking about students and talking about things, there's so many lies we've been told, and I love it because it's easy to point them out, but there's so many, so we can just concentrate on a couple. It's like those fairy tale thing. It was an educational thing.
Yeah.
When I was a kid in that place over there, it was just like little poems, fairy tales for kids. When it was, there was always an educational project. People tell you that Machiavelli wrote for the prince, but all those fairy tales were things to help people live better. much better than all those holy books